Hello and welcome to The Confession Box. I'm your host, Wendy Grace. Coming up on today's podcast, we have an honest conversation about Ireland's declining birth rate, infertility, and talk about what the government is doing about it. Joined with me to discuss this, I have fertility expert Dr. Phil Boyle, who has helped thousands of people over the last 25 years have babies. And one of the things Phil is also expert in is just looking at the general trends in fertility and infertility and birth rates and the impact that this might be having. He's an expert in restorative reproductive medicine, and we'll be hearing all about what that is as well. Dr. Boyle, thanks so much for being with us today. So one of the things that's happening in Ireland and indeed across Europe is that the population in terms of the replacement rate, the number of babies basically that we need to have in order for the population to restore and place itself, that has changed rapidly over the last number of decades. Paint the picture for me. Tell us a little bit about that.
What's fascinating is that certainly in the Western developed world, and now it's catching on in the rest of the world, we've actually been below replacement level for decades, really since the 1970s. And what this means is that there are fewer and fewer children, there are fewer and fewer people who are in the workforce, and it means we've got a top-heavy population with an increased number of aged elderly people and a small number of workforce to generate finances to be able to keep the economy going.
And what's the situation then in Ireland in particular, Dr. Boyle, just in terms of where we're at, you know, in this terms of replacement level? And presumably this is a trend that's a kind of downward trend, and it's that impact of, okay, so when you and I are of kind of pensionable age, there's not enough new babies being born now to support that, or even to support, for example, the number of people that we need in the civil service, the health service, all the practical things that help economies, and not just obviously economies, societies, cultures and communities to work. So what are the numbers in Ireland?
Well, we're below replacement, so 2.1 is this magical number. I've heard this since I was a teenager. I've heard about this and I thought, what's 2.1 kids? It's ridiculous. But it's a statistical calculation to say if you want to maintain your population at the current level and avoid a decline, to make up for births versus deaths, then you need 2.1 replacement on average throughout the entire population. So most of us, most populations are well below that. So in Ireland, we're below that magical 2.1. We've been artificially inflated by immigration, where a lot of the immigrants have been having more babies than the people in Ireland, but we're down at, we're below that replacement. In honesty, I don't know the exact number. I just know that we've been below replacement for some time, and that's a real concern. If I was to estimate, I think we're like at the 1.7 mark. You say, oh, well, that's fine. We're not too bad. We're just a little bit below. But it has a huge impact. And what I would encourage people to watch is birthgap.org. Stephen Shaw is a data analyst who's got no agenda. He's not Christian or pro-life or anything like that. He's just a data analyst. And he's concerned about the numbers.
He's looking at the data going, hang on a second, let's stand back, look at the big picture. What's the impact going to be? I know on BirthGap, there's some really interesting stats when he's looked at the data saying, you know, the likelihood, I think the average age that a woman is having her first baby in Ireland is getting older and older. It's somewhere around 30, 31. But the birth gap data shows very interesting stuff in terms of if you don't have a baby by a particular age, your chances of ever having one are kind of diminished, don't they?
So the shocking statistic that he gives is, if you're female and you don't have a baby by the time you're aged 30, statistically, there's a 50% chance you never will have a baby. And it's a shocking figure because I work in that area. And most of the time, by the time a couple comes to me with a female age 30, I'm pretty confident that I would say, from a fertility treatment point of view, we're going to get success for 3 out of every 4 in that age group. But it's not just about having success at that age. It's about meeting somebody. It's about committing, settling down, deciding to have a child. And if you haven't made those decisions yet, by the time you're 30, there's an inevitable delay that statistically results in a 50% chance you never will have a baby. And that's a shocking number. And it's a very good wake-up number for people to say, well, gosh, babies are important to me. I mean, my career and enjoying life is important. And this is this is the thing that he's discovered, that what's happened across the world is involuntary childlessness or unplanned childlessness, where people always wanted to have a baby, but they got distracted and they never get around to it. And by the time they get around to it, they shockingly discover, oh my gosh, we're too late. And he interviews people and he explores the pain that people feel through involuntary childlessness. And it's very, very real and very traumatizing for people. So it's to wake people up to the reality of this. And it's a global crisis at this point. And also, he says, it's past the point of no return, where this is now baked in. And we're going to be looking at urban decay. We're going to look at decline in schools. Teachers won't have work and communities are going to decline because the people aren't there. And that's already baked in and that's irreversible already. So, and his worry is that his talk is, well, this is how civilizations end. It's that extreme. So it's definitely something
that governments... How is it then, Dr. Boyle, that, you know, governments, they can see the data, they can see the same figures. And yet, certainly here in Ireland, it's similar across Europe, apart from maybe Hungary that has introduced some kind of family-friendly policies, which is interesting because when they introduce things like low-cost loans for homes, grants for seven-seater cars, they did see their birth rate increase. Probably not enough, but it certainly had an impact. But here in Ireland, it seems a lot of the policies that are introduced do everything to discourage people from having children. Certainly the way our economy is going, you can understand people delaying starting their families because it's so difficult for many couples to afford their first home and all these sorts of things. But there's so little that's actually done to say, you know, here's the things we're going to do to, if you want to start or grow your family, to be able to do that. And you kind of think purely from a socioeconomic perspective, even if we're going to be really just passionate about it and just say, okay, look at the numbers here. Why is there not more investment in this area?
I would like to think it must be born of ignorance. So we would give the benefit of the doubt. But now that Stephen Shaw has made this data available, I think we need to have an honest look at it. And the good thing is, he's not agenda driven. He's just looking at the data and says, you know what, we've got a serious problem here. And he interviews people like Elon Musk, who says the greatest problem is not going to be excessive population, it's population decline. And when you see somebody who's an economic visionary like Elon Musk talking about this, and again, not agenda driven, that we have to look at this in a more serious way. And people don't appreciate, myself included, until you have to watch this two or three times because it's different to the way we're used to thinking. And you really have to connect with what this means. But the other part that I think Stephen Shaw gets across really well is it's this involuntary childlessness, unplanned childlessness, and the intense pain that people experience because they always wanted a baby and they just got distracted from what was really important to them.
Distraction might be part of it, Phil, but do you think also part of it is, you know, just not being educated? I think when one of the things that fascinates me is that, you know, and as a Catholic, I think, you know, understanding our fertility through things like NFP, it's kind of like the Catholic Church's best kept secret, you know, that now others seem to be kind of catching on to. There's a lot more focus on, you know, natural ways of understanding your fertility. From a secular perspective, there's all these new kind of apps and technologies and everything. But it for myself and for so many other women, I think it's kind of like the light got switched on in understanding your body and kind of going, why was I not thought about this sooner? I mean, we do a bit of biology in school, but, you know, I think for a lot of those people that have, as you say, experienced involuntary childlessness, culturally, we're kind of sold this dream, especially women. There's a lot of pressure put on women to achieve a certain amount by a certain age, and that everything is about your career. You know, your life satisfaction is all about that, which, of course, it's very important. But so many probably find themselves in a position where the thing that they want the most they now cannot have because they've left it too long. But maybe feeling angry that, hang on, you know, I was kind of sold a pup here and I wasn't given enough kind of, I wasn't given the tools or the power by knowing exactly how my body works. And maybe those couples would have made different decisions then.
Yeah. And it starts actually with women even before couples. So I think young women in particular of a school age, they're often on this career path that you got to get a good leaving cert, you got to work hard, you got to advance in your career. And even from, I have a 15-year-old daughter, and My wife is a trained solicitor, but she opted to stay home with the children, and she felt that this is really what was in her heart more than her career and work. And she's somewhat frustrated looking at the messages given to our only daughter. We've three boys and one girl, but the messages that are given to her are all career based. And when they're looking at their life trajectory, that it's not really put on the radar. Now, she's going to a good Catholic school with all the Catholic values and all that goes with it, but there's very little value put for women on the value of motherhood and how much fulfillment you get from that and how important it is. And that, you know what, it's difficult to have it all. They're always told you can have it all, but in many ways, you can't always
You
have
can
it
have it all,
all.
just not all at once. Well, that's been my experience anyway. You can't do it all at the same time. But yeah, it's very sad that motherhood has been denigrated in many ways. And you know, I've always found it interesting being on maternity leave and being asked to go into a radio or TV program. You know, they don't want to label you as a stay-at-home mother. You know, they have to call you something else because that's not important enough. And that says a lot about our society when, of course, it's one of the most important things. Then bringing it back to, obviously, your area of expertise, Dr. Boyle, which is looking at fertility and helping people to restore their fertility in a natural way. Do you find that kind of experience that we're chatting about, that couples come to you and they kind of think, wow, I wish I knew how to kind of understand this sooner than I did now?
Yeah, and philosophically, there's a really important way of looking at this again before fertility is actively on the table. And it's this idea of fertility awareness and fertility appreciation. And what we do through the world of restorative reproductive medicine is that we say that healthy women are fertile women. And what is being pushed through our culture and our society is that fertility is being perceived as an illness or a disease, that you need to take medication to suppress it in order to live your life to the full. And rather than the idea of, say, you know what, live in a harmony with your fertility cycle and all that goes with it. So our goal is this fertility appreciation, that you really appreciate, I'm in good health, I ovulate, I've got a lovely cycle, I can identify all the healthy patterns, or the opposite, so that if a woman has painful periods, irregular cycles, premenstrual syndrome, and chronic fatigue, that we can identify these things that are adversely affecting the cycle, improve her general health, and then help women to live in harmony with their fertility. And it's something that we want them to cherish and respect and value. And then when they are in relationships, they could use this system as reliably as hormonal contraception. It's got a very high degree of reliability for fertility awareness and family planning. But what I have found in my generation in particular is when we got married, for my peers, a lot of them would say, well, we're going to go on the pill for the next 5 years because we want to live our life. And this is at a time where one couple out of six would experience infertility. And I would say, well, how do you know you're not going to be in that bracket of impaired fertility and you're switching off your fertility, you're delaying having a child? Whereas if you track your fertility cycle, you can see warning signs there, and you may decide, well, based on this unhealthy looking pattern, maybe because children will be important to us at some point, we weren't planning them this early, but maybe we'll change that decision because, you know what, if we can't have them, that's going to be something really, really difficult. So let's have them earlier. And these kinds of decisions would often happen. And then couples, they often keep having that discussion again. Why did we say we're not having children again? And they keep exploring, and they realize, you know what, children are important, and let's not delay any further.
One of
So
the things that's
it's a really good
interesting,
thing.
I'd say, Dr. Boyle, and refreshing, particularly for women to hear, is just a focus just on women's health. Because when you look at just kind of medicine in general, so much research, et cetera, is not focused on women's health. There's a lot more data and research focused on kind of men's health. And often I would say, and I'd say there's many women listening to this, you know, when they might present to their GP with issues like that are hormonal or whatever, you're kind of just fobbed off, or often, as I was told more than one occasion, just go on the pill, you know, that'll fix it. And it's been interesting to see a kind of, I think there's a kind of slow awakening to the impact that this can have. And the BBC, I think they've done two documentaries looking at the impact of kind of hormonal contraception on women's bodies, on their health, on their mood, all of these sorts of things. But again, it kind of goes back to that awareness piece. And instead of us having conversations about this. The conversation is, okay, well, our infertility rate is still 1 in 6, in and around that. There's, you know, companies talk about egg freezing and everything to delay. You know, why is the shift going in that direction? And you know, when it comes to freezing eggs and all that sort of stuff, even if they are used, the chances are very, very low it'll actually work, something like 1%. That we're just not having the honest conversations on things that actually might work better.
Well, I have a couple coming to me. She's a highly professional woman in a high pressure job. And she froze her eggs before she met her husband. She froze them at 36, 37. She came to me around 38, going on to 39, and had a lovely, successful pregnancy. But the second pregnancy wasn't coming so fast. And it was clear to me, it's a high intensity, high pressure job, and you have a young child at the same time. So what happens is your body gets pumped full of adrenaline and says, you must be joking. You want another child on top of all of this? Ain't happening. We do not have the resources to cope. And there's nothing we could do medically to encourage her to ovulate effectively again, combined with the busyness of her life and her job. So she said, well, look, good job. I got those frozen ones. Let's go and activate that. So she went, and when they went to thaw them out, there were no viable eggs available for her to even fertilize in order to have embryos to transfer. So what was her eggs in the bank, so to speak, was a waste of time, and quite tragic on one level to see that. And what we've got to do is we've got to respect our nature and say, look, it's a bit of self-preservation where your body kicks in and says, this is not in your best interest to get pregnant because you're struggling to exist. So we need you at this relaxed, enjoyable place, and you got to drop tools a lot more in order for this to happen. So it's been a common recurring theme that I've seen. But this thing of the freezing of eggs and using the frozen ones is a new thing. And sadly, I don't know the percentages. I don't know if they're as low as 1%, but I'm not sure where that number comes from, to be honest. But
yeah, I mean, it's one thing. I think it was for women who are after 35, kind of freezing their eggs. That then when they use it's very low. It's and it's very expensive and invasive and all those sorts of things. But when I hear women in their 20s kind of talking about this, or this idea, this mentality, if they're kind of in their career, they haven't met somebody, it's kind of very flippantly. I've heard it so many times, just trying out there. Oh, sure, I can just do IVF. I can just freeze my eggs. Do you think there's a total misunderstanding about the reality of these things, how difficult they are, and how low the success rates on average are?
So recently, I've been compelled to look at the IVF data more directly because the government have provided funding for in vitro fertilization, and they don't provide funding for restorative reproductive medicine. And when I've looked into the numbers, I've been personally surprised that the IVF live birth rate is less than I would have imagined. It's right down at, now you have a regulator in the UK, the HFEA, Human Fertilisation and Embryology Authority. And if you're 42 and under, the live birth rate per treatment cycle is right down at 24%. When I looked at the same population of patients treated in 2019 through our practice, we're right up at 40%. And our population was over a year older, which mitigates against and should give us a lower success rate. So the point is that if you implement a multifactorial restorative approach, I'm confident that's superior to doing a single treatment cycle of IVF for a fraction of the cost.
How does that make you feel in terms of, it might be frustrating for people listening who will know that the government is now funding for eligible couples IVF. So this is obviously coming from the taxpayer. And on the one hand, it's really good because we have these fertility hubs across the country. So great that there's kind of at least a step towards, look, let's help you try to get your body working the right way. But the funding only applies for IVF. You would have thought that maybe they would have done some sort of kind of cost benefit analysis. Again, you have to be dispassionate about these things. It's all about the data. It's all about the numbers. But it seems that the opposite is happening when it comes to helping couples who are struggling to conceive.
Absolutely. So I've written to the Department of Health and I've put a video out on YouTube demonstrating the numbers, and the numbers are quite stunning. And I would say from a pure accountability point of view and oversight, I'm challenging the government to say that once people are finished with the standard fertility treatment through a fertility hub, I'm confident with restorative reproductive medicine, we can deliver a higher number of successful pregnancies at a much lower cost. Please, feel free to continue to allow the funding to go to in vitro fertilization, but provide funding for people who wish to go for restorative reproductive medicine. And let's be honest about our numbers and let's look at them in a clear, objective way. We're less than It's actually, when I've looked at the numbers, for every baby born through in vitro fertilization, if the numbers from the UK hold out, on average, it'll cost €20,000 per baby born, compared to €5,000 per baby born through restorative reproductive medicine. So it's actually per baby born, it's four times more expensive to do artificial reproduction with in vitro fertilization.
It's pretty frustrating to hear, and especially for couples who are listening to this going, hang on, maybe they've been to one of these fertility hubs and like you're sitting there in a very, for a lot, Dr. Boyle, vulnerable situation, highly emotive time, maybe after years of struggling to have a baby, a stressful time. And you want to be given all the information about the options available to you and what might suit you best and what kind of road you might want to go down as a couple. Is a lot of this about saying, here's all the information, here's all the data, and you know, you can choose then how to spend this allocation of funding?
So I think that the government policy needs to be challenged because they're using the public purse. And if they're using the public purse, they need to have oversight and accountability. So they've recently said, look, we've made funding available. We've provided free IVF treatment, so-called free, but paid by us, the taxpayer, to 500 people. Say, oh, you used my money for that. Well, tell me, out of those 500 people, how many conceived? How many had a live birth? How many had a premature birth? What were their birth weights? And what was the couple's experience through the whole process? And tragically, I'm not confident they're going to make those numbers available to us.
It's
But they
hard to
need
think that they
to.
will make them available, given, as you said, that there is no regulatory body currently in Ireland for the IVF industry. I was kind of hopeful, well, maybe this will happen if government funding is being allocated. But it means that it's a lot easier then for some of these clinics to, without, I think it's fair to say, to be peddling kind of misleading information. I looked at lots of different websites of different clinics and, you know, what they use in their success rates. I think one website said, you know, outstanding success rates, but they were using the pregnancy rate as opposed to the live birth rate. So pregnancy rate is maybe you explain the difference. And also then I thought, is this what's being used with couples sitting in these fertility hubs? They are so different, the figures, but explain them to us and how they differ and why it's important we need to know the difference.
So I'm quite amazed that I've had people who have come to me who have no baby after IVF, but they tell me, oh, the IVF was a success. And I kind of look at them, but you don't have a baby. And they were told, oh, well, it was successful because we had a clinical pregnancy, but then it just didn't continue. I said, well, and it's remarkable that their promotion of their success, even couples who don't have baby in hand, they're calling it was a successful IVF. And it's tragic. So, but the numbers come out at you start with 100 people. So, and out of 100 people, say you're going to get 40 that have a positive pregnancy test. And out of those 40 that have a positive pregnancy test, you may have, say, 24 who have a live birth. So that's the way the numbers go. But if people will commonly look at the 40% and say, this is pretty good. I say, no, that's a clinical pregnancy. It's not baby in hand.
And ultimately, that's what
So,
people want. They want a baby in arms at the end of 9 months. Now, if I go onto some of these websites and I'm 42, it'll say that the success rate, and this is the pregnancy rate, is 25%. So I'm like, okay, I'll give it a shot. When actually, in reality, it's more like 1 to 3%. I can understand why, especially now that this is being government funded, that we don't have a portal. I looked at in the US, the CDC, the Center for Disease Control, has this portal where you put in your age, your weight, there's other criteria, you know, if you've other issues going on, and it gives you your percentage. You know, your percentage chance. So it's very clear the data is there, and we can obviously take the data from other countries and their sample sizes. So, why are these clinics not being compelled to use this? You're obviously very happy, Dr. Boyle, to say, here's our data, work away with it.
Yeah. So I think, I don't know, that it's how it's reported internationally where they talk about clinical pregnancies as opposed to live births. So they say, well, we're following the international standard. It's what everybody else is doing. And if one clinic does it, then they all have to do it. So they're comparing like with like. But the difficulty is people misperceive this and say, well, that's the chance. If I start an IVF cycle, that's the chance I'm going to have baby in hand, whereas that number is much lower than what is commonly promoted. So I think we need to call out fertility clinics on that, every fertility clinic, and say, well, if I start with the process, what's the chance I'm going to have baby in hand, and be real about what the numbers are. And I often say to people, look, there's absolutely no guarantee whatever way we go. And some people, depending on their history and their age, I give them quite low numbers. And I say, I wish the numbers could be higher, but we'll give 100% effort. But at the end, your chances of having baby in hand are whatever. And it does depend on their age and their history and so on as well. And you try and give them, manage their expectations in a realistic way.
One of the things that's frustrating as well is when you look at the impact, particularly that IVF has on a woman's body, but the pressure that it puts on the couple as well. And I was looking at a piece of research where the Fertility Network in the UK showed that 4 in 10 women undergoing IVF treatment felt suicidal at one point or another during the treatment. And for me, it's another kind of slap in the face to women, where it's kind of, hang on a second, this is something that's having a real impact on some women and their bodies and their overall well-being. So why is there not more of an effort to do, as you say, you know, when it comes to restorative reproductive medicine? Well, a healthy body is a fertile body. And I know you've had very different experiences with couples who, you know, in your data and your research kind of say, actually, this was, not only did it work, but it was also good for us as a couple. So it's so different.
It's a different planet completely. So the beauty of restorative reproductive medicine is that we don't get into hyperstimulation and egg retrieval, and you don't feel unwell, that we balance your cycle and we restore optimum functioning. We get rid of things like fatigue, premenstrual syndrome, period pain, and then we check and balance and make sure. So we do male and female treatment, we do medical and surgical. But one of the key things is we work with a fertility chart. And that's the aspect that's been largely ignored by my peers in fertility clinics. They underestimate the role of documenting the key signs of your fertility in a specific way. But if we do all of that and we find the root causes, and very common for us, we'll find 4 or 5 different root causes that need to be identified and balanced. And then you give it the time and you give it the right environment. So another area where I believe fertility clinics run short is that they give up too quickly. They don't persist for long enough once a balance has been obtained. And I have one couple in particular, they had 5 rounds of IVF. They did 3 rounds of their own eggs. They were 8 years trying to conceive, and 3 IVF with their own eggs, 2 rounds with donor eggs. And in the middle of COVID, they took a change of strategy and they came our direction. And we found root reasons behind why they weren't conceiving. And once we found and fixed everything, it still took 12 cycles before we finally got there. And I often think they could have stopped cycle 9, 10, 11, but as their 12th balance cycle, finally it came good. But they went on and subsequently conceived spontaneously with no medications for the second pregnancy. And that's the beauty of restorative reproductive medicine. If you find the root reason and you fix it, about 20 to 25% of couples get pregnant with no medical intervention after they have
the body kind of kicks in. The body says, oh, I figured out how to work again. Just finally to ask you, Dr. Brown, we've talked about a lot today, you know, going back to the fact that, hang on, our birth rate is just falling below replacement level in Ireland. There's not enough discussion on women understanding their fertility, and even just how that's a kind of indicator of your overall general health when you understand it. Not enough government support for people growing and expanding their families. And then we've obviously talked about, you know, just the impact of this new funding scheme and not allowing choice to couples. It doesn't seem to be going in the right direction. Like, what would your message be to people that are listening today if they're considering the kind of overall topic of babies and fertility, and how, especially for women that are listening, that maybe they're in their 30s, for mums like me who have daughters, and think, well, what's the best way for me to navigate all of this?
I think it's for the general public to make their voice heard, for them to understand the issues that are at stake, because it could be argued for me running a restorative fertility clinic that I've got a vested interest to promote my practice and the way I approach things. But I'm very keen to help educate people so they're aware. And most people, when they become aware of this, a lot of my patients become evangelists of restorative reproductive medicine. So there'd be lots of things I'm sure Sure, theologically we would have differing opinions on, but we can clearly see, you know what, this is a good way to understand and manage fertility, and they need to make their voice heard. They've a media that largely isn't interested in this message, and a government that doesn't seem to be as answerable to the people as they ought to be. And that's a real challenge, but they need to make their voice heard regardless. And so I can't even get to speak with the Department of Health on something. And I'm saying, guys, I want to save you money. I want to be able to treat more people at a lower cost and get more babies. What is not to like about this? And it's falling on deaf ears. But I think until the general public make their voice heard, that it's going to be still an uphill struggle, but one that's worthy to engage in, because it's the people who are suffering from these issues that really need to express how important it is to them.
Yeah, well, Dr. Boyle, it's been a very interesting discussion and I'm sure illuminating for many. Thanks so much for joining us on the Confession Box today, Dr. Phil Boyle, and thank you for being with us today. Please do subscribe on your favourite platform and share it with family and friends. I've been your host, Wendy Grace. I'll talk to you soon.